Welcome to Katie's Crib, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
When they were going to take me up to a room after I was feeling better, they said that he could not join because of the regulations. And I said, listen, like when people birth children, are their partners able to come? They said, yes. And I said, well, why don't you tell your manager that I birthed a child today? And my husband is coming with me. You have to be your own advocate.
Everybody, and welcome back to Katie's Crib. I have been trying to get today's guest on since the beginning because today's guest is the one and only Kim Vanderbeek. She has five children and has had just so many real life experiences that we get into in this podcast. She is the wife of actor James Vanderbeek, who my husband is obsessed with, and they are good friends. And he's best known, obviously, for his portrayal of Dawson Leary in the series Dawson's Creek. But prior to meeting James, Kim Vanderbeek worked as a business consultant in Tel Aviv. She's worked as a wellness blogger. She's written articles for People magazine and Food Heals Nation. She and James have four daughters, Olivia, Annabelle, Amelia, and Gwendolyn, and a son named Joshua. Thank you so much for coming on to Katie's Crib. Hi, Kim. Whenever I've seen you out in public or at parties with James and whatever, your husband and my husband work together on certain TV shows. We have mutual friends in common, but I don't understand how you have so many children. And it seems like you've got it all going on and you're enjoying it, honestly. I'm not to say that it doesn't have its ups and downs and it's a shit show here and there, but it honestly seems to me that it's a good time. I mean, you're probably the only person where I'm like, should I have like a whole pack of kids? Like, this is amazing. And how many times have you been pregnant?
A lot.
Like, do you and James have sex and don't get pregnant?
Thankfully, yes. We've had sex more times than we have children.
Like, it's unfucking real to me. I'm like, come on, so blown away by you guys.
A hottie.
My God, you're both so attractive. It's ridiculous. Have you always wanted to have a lot of kids?
I always knew I was going to have probably three or more, but there wasn't really a plan. James says he claims that we discussed five at the beginning of the relationship. I do not remember that conversation at all.
Do you think it was meeting James that was like, you might have had three with someone else, but it's for some reason, it's like the two of you together, you just can't keep your hands off each other? I mean, what is going on? Or is it just like you're part of fate and like what the universe provides is what's happening? Like, tell me.
It's the universe providing what it wants. We were just very open going into our relationship with whatever the flow was going to be. So we ended up with a lot of children.
What were the pregnancies like? Were they different? Were they the same? And the labors?
Well, okay, let's start with Olivia, my 10-year-old. When I got pregnant with her, 2 days after I moved in with James.
So it was an easy 1-2 shebang.
Yeah, I moved in with James about 6 months after we met, and I got pregnant with her 2 days after moving in. Now, here's a little juicy piece of detail people don't know. James and I waited about 5.5 months before we even gave ourselves an opportunity to get pregnant. We both were in a place of, is this real? Let's really check it out. And so by the time we moved in together, we knew we wanted to be together and got pregnant pretty quickly. I was living between LA and New York, and I had a couple weeks, my first trimester, where getting out of bed was simply not happening. I tell people that you do not know what tired is until you understand pregnancy tired. And I refer to it as bone tired, tired all the way into your bones.
That is a great thing that I am stealing. I've never heard it and I get it. And it is such a perfect description.
It's bone tired. And actually, the moment you have the baby, you forget what bone tired is. I mean, even newborn tired is not bone tired. You get so tired, but it's a different thing when you're making a baby inside your body. So yeah, I had a couple weeks where I couldn't get out of bed. It was really difficult. And all I wanted to eat with Olivia were oranges and cucumbers.
Were you nauseous with her?
I would get very nauseous, not throw up, but really, really nauseous. The smell of steak, meat, garlic, like repulsed me to levels I cannot even explain to you. Fast forward, you know, I got all the energy second trimester, third trimester. I even was the crazy one putting on heels and, you know, just walking around like, yay, I'm pregnant. I'm having a baby and I'm so psyched.
I've watched that interview with Demi Moore when she did that huge like naked photo shoot. But she was like, I have felt really powerful and beautiful like in my body. And that happens for some women.
Yes, it gave me a level of confidence. Like if I can't be this way for myself, I get to be this way for my daughter.
Did you know you were going to have a girl?
James was really convinced we were going to have a boy until that ultrasound came in. So convinced that we didn't even bother having that ultrasound until I was maybe 25, 26 weeks.
Wow. That's hilarious. I love that. How was Olivia's labor being your first time? Was it so much longer than the next four?
Yeah, so much longer. And everybody says your first one, you know, you really, your body is learning with you how to birth children. It's first time. I remember seeing my mucus plug. It was on a Thursday night. And I said to James, I'm like, hey, I'm going to start labor soon. And he goes, okay. And I don't know how I had that much confidence with what I was saying. We went to sleep in a sukkah that night for the holiday of Sukkot. And we were outside and I started laboring the whole night. I never woke him up. I'm like, you know what? He just needs to get some sleep. Then the next morning, I took some baths and, you know, in and out of contractions. And then by that evening, my doula came over and I was cooking. They were coming quickly, like 5 minutes apart. So we went to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, that's when I decided I really don't like hospitals. They asked me to fill out paperwork, and I don't agree with women filling out paperwork in labor or sitting there and answering 2 to 4 pages of medical questions. It's like, this is why I pre-registered, woman. I don't want to fill out paperwork in labor. I'm coming to you when I'm ready to give birth. Stop it.
This is such a funny point. Like I remember showing up having contractions like two, three minutes apart with my second that I just had. And I'm getting COVID tested with the brain scratcher up my nose. And Adam's asking me for like all of my information. And I'm like, yes, we already filled all this shit out. Like, why are we fucking doing this right now? Like, this is insane. Like, I am not in a place. You're so right. So wait, was that your only labor in a hospital or did you labor them all in the hospital?
Yes, it was. And that was decidedly my only labor in a hospital. So I got there. I was so upset about the paperwork. It took me out of that raw, animalistic place. I was so upset about the drive. I got in there and they checked me and they said, you're not even a centimeter dilated. We're going to send you home. And I said, no, you're not. I'm not getting back in the car and driving back. And they're like, well, you know, this is going to be a long time. And thankfully, my doctor spoke to me and she goes, I remember that you have a lot of quick labors. I'll tell them that you can stay. I said, okay, great. I made everybody leave the room except for me and my husband. And within an hour, I was dilated to 9 with pushing contractions.
Thank God you didn't get in the car and drove home.
Well, if I would have, I think it would have been the fight or flight. I think my body would have resisted and we would have ended up with a true situation. But I pushed for 2.5 hours and she wasn't coming out. I was wiped. I had already been in pre-labor for a day and a half or something. Then they gave me an epidural and I pushed for 2.5 more hours and they finally used a suction to help get her out.
Was it scary?
I wasn't scared, but I was extremely exhausted. And my body is very, very sensitive to medication. So I get super nauseous and off kilter on any kind of medication. I was frustrated. I kind of felt like intuitively I wanted to do it at home and I was convinced to not. But I'm actually super grateful for my hospital birth experience, because I feel like I can really be there for a woman in a different way, knowing, you know, just having that experience. And I know everybody's experience is different and every hospital is different and every doctor is different and every baby and mother is different. But just the logistics of what happens, I'm able to prep a lot of friends just so you know, when you get there, this is going to happen. And so for that, I'm super grateful for the experience. The next four I had at home. So with Joshua, I thought, you know, my doctor did let me stay at the hospital. She did give me that leeway. Maybe I'll just stick with her. Maybe I'll, you know, do it. Now I know what to expect. So I did that. And then I found out he was breech and he wasn't churning. So she said, you know, you're going to have a C-section. And it didn't intuitively feel right to me. And I know a lot of women have C-sections. They feel very comfortable having C-sections, especially with their breech baby. But I'm a big advocate of get your information and then trust your intuition. And for me, it was like, no, my mom birthed my sister breech naturally at the hospital. And so I'm like, well, why was my mother able to do that? Well, I went and I looked at the studies that they had on breech births, and they took into account third world malnourished countries, and they didn't have a head down counterpart. So when you go to the studies that they're doing out of Israel, Germany, and Australia, they're actually saying breech birth is a risk versus a risk. And it depends. Do you have a doctor that knows how to do breech births? Because they stopped teaching in medical schools based off this outdated study. And so I found a doctor that's done hundreds of successful breech births, and at 37 weeks pregnant, switched to a home birth plan with this doctor that had birthed hundreds of breech babies. And intuitively, I just took a deep sigh because I had always wanted to do home births. It just felt more comfortable for me. I never felt comfort in the hospital. And I think a woman needs to feel comfortable where she's at. So if my friends are very anxious about childbirth, I'm like, you know, you might feel more comfortable in the hospital where you have all the bells and whistles. But for me, it was really just not that. And so my water broke at 3 o'clock. And then I gave Olivia a bath that night and cried like, what am I doing? You know, I won't be able to give her all the attention in the world anymore. And this is her last night, is my only child. It was so emotional. And then I went to bed and I woke up at 5:30 in the morning with booming contractions and had Joshua by 7. I think it was 32 or something like that.
Did you have to push for a long time with him?
No, my doctor almost didn't make it.
Oh my God. How was it without an epidural?
Oh, it's painful, but I have this thing. Like if you know an epidural is available to you, you count down the seconds like they're years. You don't have the zone. You're like, give it to me now. If you know that one's not available and you're breathing and you just, you know, letting the rest of the room fade away, you have a different sort of strength that starts to take over. And so, yes, it was incredibly painful, but I knew that I was working harmoniously with my body and Joshua for this birth. And it was just, you know, you go into a flow, into this animalistic zone. It was really amazing and so beautiful.
Did you find out with all of them what their, if they were a boy or a girl? Or
great question. I found out with Olivia and Joshua, but Annabelle, we thought this one wants to be a surprise. And boy, has she been a surprise for her whole life. So she was 30 minutes of active labor, 10 minutes in the water, didn't make a peep, the most beautiful, peaceful birth. Everybody was like, we barely heard you. It was more a few moaning sounds and she was born. My midwife, Beth Cannon, was there. My doula, Yvonne Novak, was there. And my doctor, Stuart Fishbein, I told him, listen, we have time. So it's not even his fault. I'm like, take your time. My whole birthing team were huge hockey fans. And I was trying to let them watch more of the game and not being really honest with where I was. Not thinking this is only going to take a half an hour. The midwife was there. My doctor came like 3 minutes later. And I had pizza and the hockey game downstairs playing for them. Nobody ever got to watch or eat a piece of that pizza.
Oh my God, Kim, this is crazy.
It's crazy. He was like, you literally text me like 7 minutes before he had the baby. It's like, I know.
And she was born in 4 seconds in the water. How did the water feel?
Heavenly. It was so beautiful. It was, we just sat in there. I just poured water on her head. It was crazy enough. It was bloodless. until the placenta was birthed, there wasn't a drop of blood in the water. And then Amelia, I thought, God, that was great. I'm going to shoot for that again. And I called my birth team was like, the first strong contraction, call us. We're not timing these things 5 minutes. The first strong contraction, you're calling us. So my first strong contraction, I called them. They came. They actually got to see me in labor for the first time. But we went upstairs and I'm thinking, you know, beautiful water birth again. You don't get in the water too early when you're having a water birth because it can actually slow down labor. But I was cooking and I felt something was a little different, but I got in the water. I'm thinking I'm really starting to have pushing contractions and she wasn't coming out. So for this one, my birth team was going to stay in the other room. So we thought, you know, let's just let it be us in the room. And our team is right outside the door.
Wow. Like it was just going to be the two of you.
Well, it was just going to be the two of us, but something felt different. So I called in my team to just watch, check my breathing, and we did some movements and she was like stuck in there a little bit. I had to do some like wiggling movements in the water and eventually I got her out. But because that one took longer, the water was cold and she was born with half of her face all blue from just bruising because she had been sitting in this weird position in my body for a while. So it wasn't exactly Annabelle's labor and her brain plates were like overlapping her head plates.
Did that scare the shit out of you? Or did you know that everything was okay?
I knew everything was okay. I kind of did a little check-in. The team was, you know, looking like, okay, this baby's blue on half of her face, but the half of her face that wasn't blue was facing me and I could see she was breathing and she was peaceful. The blue part of her face was facing them.
This is the greatest experience Katie's Crib has ever had. Like, we've never had anyone that's had five kids on, let alone we have to get to it. You've had seven pregnancies.
So with Gwendolyn, I was in labor. I called my team right away. Yeah, I actually didn't want anybody around for the labor. I was just laying in bed. I would lay in bed and then I would need to go to the toilet. And ladies, I had to poop a lot. Every contraction, it was coming out of me. And one thing nobody ever tells you is this is very normal when you're in labor, right? So I was just going from the toilet to the bed. From the toilet to the bed, from the toilet to the bed. And so my team would peek in and look, okay, she's good. I was very in my zone this time. This was my first labor without cracking jokes. And I just wanted to make these sounds, like to activate and rattle my third eye, like hum. And that's all I wanted to do. And I'm like, I'm just gonna melt into what my body's asking. And then I'm like, call the kids. And there was not enough time to fill up my birth tub. So I'm holding on to my birth tub, squatting. And I sit back as my midwife runs behind me to catch me. I'm literally birthing Gwendolyn in her arms while Olivia and Joshua are there. And then Julie is another midwife that I love. I invited her. I'm like, why not, Julie? Come. Like, I love Julie. And so I had Julie behind Beth, holding Beth's back up and putting her feet against the wall. So it was like this whole ballet that happened in like 5 seconds of time. These women got in place to like hold me up so I could sit and birth Gwendolyn. Joshua was kind of bummed because he was looking at my butt thinking that was where the baby was coming from. So he didn't actually see it. It happened so quickly. But Olivia was right there and she saw it and she just, it was very special. But I'm glad Joshua got to be in the space and really see what the labor and how James was down there and the baby, you know, Gwendolyn came into James' arms and they all have their own lives and had a lot of different experiences between some are more difficult than others. I'm grateful for every single one. And I think the babies also determine how they want to be born and what kind of intervention happens.
You're really in touch not only with your instinct, but then with each baby's like own personal spirit and temperament and letting them guide what sort of way they want to come into the world and meeting you wherever that is. I'm someone that feels more comfortable in a hospital because I run super, super anxious. And so I am just want the most amount of doctors around. But I could imagine like me putting myself in someone's shoes. Like if you're someone that a hospital is not where you feel safe and you feel fear or anxiety when you get there. It's like, yeah, there are other options, which like everyone should feel comfortable. They should feel in their body. They should feel like they have at their fingertips the ability to have the birth experience that they want.
Or have the opportunity to have the birth experience that they want, because birth does have its own life and we don't know how that story is going to unfold. But people, a lot of people would say to me, well, there's a risk. And I'm like, quite honestly, I'm done with being told there's a risk of having a home birth. There's a risk of a hospital birth. There's a risk of all of them. Well, what if you don't get to the doctor in time and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, what if my anxiety closes me up and creates a whole host of problems? I've been there before, too.
And also, I've heard all these things about home births. Like, you have to qualify for a home birth. Like, the most incredible midwives and doulas, like, you have to go through extensive sort of, like, be studied in a way to even be, like, applicable that people are going to come and do it because that they know that there's not a super high risk of something happening or whatever it is.
Well, not every midwife and doctor is created equal. But I do believe the really great ones out there go through a checklist and they have different sort of things that they're looking for. And one of them is your mental outlook at birth in general. And do you feel comfortable at home? So for me, yes, I had always wanted a home birth and I feel most comfortable at home. And quite honestly, I think I would have missed making it to the hospital a couple of times. And I think it's safer for me to have my whole setup situated at my house, not like figuring things out in a car on the way there. So it is what it is. And we have to really honor the information and what our intuition is telling us. Back to your question, 7 pregnancies. So I've had 5 miscarriages. 2 of them were significant miscarriages that hospitalized me. So it's very interesting. I've been able to have 4 home births, but 2 of my miscarriages required the hospital and blood transfusions. And that is when the hospital saved my life twice. And so I have gratitude for the place a hospital has had in my life as well.
Where did the miscarriages happen?
So they happened at home and after Gwendolyn, both of them. So I had Olivia and I had Joshua, then I had a miscarriage, then I had Annabelle, then I had a miscarriage, then I had Amelia, then I had a miscarriage, then I had Gwendolyn, then I had back-to-back miscarriages at 17 and a half weeks each, and both of those hospitalized me. Now, we think we got down to the cause of it being a weakened cervix. James would be very quick to tell a doctor if they use the term incompetent cervix to stop using language like that.
Thank you, James. You are the best.
So now some doctors are switching the term to weakened cervix. So what can happen is if your baby is taking all the tests and measuring great in the pregnancy, looks great, heartbeat's great, everything's great. If all of your measurements in your body and the way things are look like everything is in alignment for a healthy birth, but you're having these pregnancy losses sometime between 17, 18 weeks and 25 weeks is very rare. So you can't have 2 in a row and have them be these anomalies, right? I had this perinatologist was like, this, what probably happened is a spontaneous opening of the cervix from a weakened cervix. And that can happen and you would never know because it closes back up. So what you do is for future pregnancies, you get a stitch. Very interesting because in medical school, I think I was told that they wait till you have maybe 4 or 5 of these situations. But some doctors will be like 1 loss where everything looks like it's going great. And then this happens after 1 loss. Some of these doctors will just start putting in that stitch and have seen a lot of success around it. And actually, I'm going to switch it from miscarriage to pregnancy loss. Thank you to my husband as well, because he said a miscarriage says that a woman miscarried the baby.
This is brilliant.
Yes, or they call a miscarriage also a spontaneous abortion. He said it's a pregnancy loss. And I'm like, honey, thank you.
I love the vocabulary shift, which is wildly important. So at 17 and a half weeks, both of these recent ones, did you wake up and did you know something was wrong? Did you see blood? Like, how did you know the pregnancy was something was amiss? And when we say significant, I mean that the other ones you had were before 12 weeks and they ended on them their own, like a very heavy period.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because every miscarriage is significant to somebody, right? Significant to my health, I would like to add, my physical health. So I was sitting watching a movie with my kids and James, and I started feeling dilation and crampiness. And I said to my husband, there's something going on here. And he's like, it's probably okay, you know? And so I said, okay. And then I was like, no, there's something happening. I'm feeling like I'm dilating and I feel really crampy. Something's off. So I went into meditation to check in, and the word fortitude kept coming in. Fortitude, fortitude. And my husband, being the human dictionary that he is, I said, what exactly is fortitude? And he goes, strength. I was like, oh, I'm good. So then it still felt off. So I went upstairs to my room and I looked up fortitude is strength during emergency situations. And I said, okay, I know what's happening here. Within 2 minutes, I was in the shower birthing this baby. And, you know, of course, I've had three where you see the fetus, and it was devastating, just like absolute devastation. And then I was told intuitively, you're going to be in the hospital. I'm thinking, no, I've had miscarriages before. I'm fine. So then all of a sudden, you know, after like 30 minutes, I start turning white. I can't like keep my consciousness and I faint. And I ended up needing to go to the hospital. And I guess I lost too much blood. So when you have later term miscarriages, and it doesn't always become the fact, but sometimes it starts pulling things down when it's premature. And I did lose a lot of blood. And I just remember seeing Gwendolyn in James' arms and like look of terror as like I'm being whisked away. They put me into the chair to take me down the stairs, like the paramedics, and just fainted during that, like just couldn't keep blood in my brain. I actually thought I was going to die. And I kept asking my friend, like, am I dying? What's going on? And then the doctor, I hear him saying, okay, this isn't working. At this point, they have blood going into so many different parts of my body. They didn't have enough blood warmers. So I have cold blood now going into my body. So my whole body is just shaking and uncontrollably cold. And there's no amount of like heat packs that can keep me warm when you have cold blood in your body. And it was just such an experience. And I just, this gets really spiritual. So I'm looking up at the hospital lights and I keep hearing this voice inside of me. The same one that said fortitude was like, surrender, surrender, surrender. And I'm like, you're asking me to die. I'm going to fight. Cause I've read about these moments where people fight for their lives. I'm fighting for my life. I fought and I fought and I fought and I fought. And for 2 hours, they couldn't stabilize me. And then after I just couldn't fight anymore, I was like, I just need to drift away. So I did finally the complete surrender. And all of a sudden the machine start beep, beep, beep. And I totally came back in that moment of surrender, where I let my body surrender and stop fighting, is the moment my vitals came back.
Such a lesson in just like going along with what is in store.
To listen to the intuition, really, because I was being guided. It's like, I knew something's off. Now I'm hearing fortitude. Now I'm in the shower. I'm thinking I'm being told I'm going to the hospital. Now I'm being told to surrender, you know, and to stop fighting my intuition. So the next time that it happened at 17 and a half weeks, I'm sitting in a rocking chair, water breaks, and I just run upstairs and all my kids' daylight are there. And I tell James, my water broke. And I run upstairs straight into the shower and I have a miscarriage. And this time I'm like, call the ambulance.
Like you went into labor again, like, and the baby comes out?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, the water came out, body went into very quick labor, contractions, baby came. And so, you know, the paramedics got me. It was kind of healing. The reason it was healing wasn't from pregnancy loss. That was devastating. I just couldn't stop crying. But from the fact that I felt like I wasn't going to die this time. I felt like my body was going to be safe. But then I get to the hospital and I'm questioning the guy about everything in the ambulance. Nobody could go with me this time because it was COVID. It was June 14th, the day before my daughter's second birthday.
Oh,
I know. And I'm like, I'm picking everybody's brain about COVID. I'm just asking all the questions. I'm like, I want the real scoop here.
Oh my God.
I was so devastated, but there was the part of me that was like, but at least I'm alive. And then I get to the hospital and the moment I try to go to the bathroom, bam, consciousness gone. Can't keep consciousness. Turned into emergency, needed blood. Like, but this time they thought like, oh, we're going to wait till we can like filter the blood. So they filter blood when you get it. They go through the blood, they filter and they bring you your blood type. Well, they were trying to do that for me because it was really difficult for me to integrate the blood the time before. This time they're like, let's, you know, do this for her. And then I ended up needing the emergency bag. It's like, no, I can't wait one more moment. I just kept fainting. So they gave it to me. And then eventually by the third bag, they were able to give me my blood type. Thank God for blood donors. Thank God for universal blood donors. Thank God for all of it.
And you're alone all these times. Like James couldn't be there with you because of COVID. And the first time James couldn't be there with you because he's watching 4-5 children.
We were able to have somebody watch the kids. And then this time James met me at the hospital. He came into the room. And at this point, when they were going to take me up to a room after I was feeling better, they said that he could not join because of the regulations. And I said, listen, like we have the same germs, first of all. And second of all, when people birth children, are their partners able to come? They said, yes. And I said, well, why don't you tell your manager that I birthed a child today? And my husband is coming with me.
I am obsessed with you. Like you are just like, I'm telling you, you don't get the instinct and the boundaries and the standing up for yourself. Like you are a mother bear, like none other.
You have to be your own advocate. Here's the sad thing about those two, latter miscarriages was they were both boys and Joshua was so elated to have a brother. So that was pretty devastating for him as much as he loves his sisters. You know, there was just so much excitement about a little boy having a little boy around. But Joshua is the best possible brother that you could have to sisters. He's just so kind and gentle and sensitive and they certainly keep him on his toes.
How did they take the pregnancy? I mean, obviously, they must have been very scared for your health and your safety. But I take it you're very honest and clear with what happened. And
that is definitely the route that we chose. I think that, you know, sometimes that we try to protect our children from information. And energetically, they can feel that something's off. And so if we can just put it out in the open and allow everybody to process it, that's beautiful. Now, the amount of detail you go into differs with emotional intelligence and maturity and age, right? So things become a little more vague, but honest vague. But we told them all. We all cried about it. We all processed it. You know, we still talk about it. My kids will say, I miss Grammy M or I'm thinking about the miscarriage or I'm thinking about the little brother or, you know, like they'll bring it up when they're feeling it because there's an invitation there to express and to go through. Well, sometimes when something big happens, we'll have a family circle, which is where we all sit in a circle. We light a candle with an intention to process whatever emotions we're feeling and talk about them. And we'll just sit in a circle and we'll all, you know, share how we're feeling. And sometimes the child won't want to.
In the nature versus nurture question, I feel so much just like, wow, like my children are really my children and how I met them is who they are. And even though I can, like, I'm one for like, we don't mold them, we unfold them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You can raise them all the same or similarly, and you'll start noticing that maybe they actually require different things from you because they come in as their own person with their own soul and their own way of being. I think the nature and the nurture both have components that feed into the whole thing, but I think their energetic fields draw in exactly their experiences that they're getting as well as ours do.
I completely agree with that. I completely agree with that. Do you think there's a lot to birth order?
It's hard to say whether their energetic field asked to be first because they had that kind of energy or if it's a result of the nurturing. I mean, it's probably also both, right? James and I are both firstborns, and there are definitely traits that Olivia has that are firstborn traits, you know?
Now, do you make time to solo play with each of them? I can't even imagine how one does that.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I had a lot of concerns, actually. Each pregnancy, I'm thinking, oh, now I have less one-on-one time for my children. And I think at that point, you have to realize, like, one-on-one time is really important for a child. So they get it when they snuggle at night. I go, and James and I each have a song and a snuggle that we do with each child where we open up a little bit of discussion. You know, we try to take them on their own little date days occasionally. James actually does that more frequently than I do. But you have to realize you can't be everybody's everything. That sometimes the village comes in, sometimes the siblings come in to help heal and nurture and listen and ask questions. And, you know, when you feel like something needs to be brought to the surface, that's when a family circle or a gathering can happen. But you can also tell, like, this child is needing a little something extra right now. I have one child that we do a lot of sunset walks together. So that's kind of our thing. Olivia, she says, like, I want more one-on-one time with you. So, okay, what do you want to do? Like, you know, give a few options. We talk. And so we take sunset walks together very frequently.
And it can be really short. It doesn't have to be a whole day, or it doesn't have to be even like a whole morning or an hour.
What you're saying is actually, I think, one of the most important parenting tips anybody can give. There was a teacher once that told me that it really can just be walking around the block once to pick a flower. But if they know that they have that time with you, then there's a conversation that can happen. So that's why typically it happens bedtime for us, and then whoever I'm intuiting need it. That's one thing I would love to make more rhythmic that hasn't happened as much since our move to Texas. But, you know, as they need it, they all do get one-on-one time with both of us. It's just not as much when you have five.
They also have each other, which is like so, I'm sure, during COVID. Was that just so great? Like, I wanted to blow my brains out. Like, I was alone with a 3.5-year-old and I was the only option of someone to play with. And I was like, this is hell on earth.
I know. I've had a lot of conversations with mothers about how when you have multiple children during a time like that, it's actually a lot easier because they really do play together, they play catch, they draw together, they talk together, they dance together, they make up choreography together. There's all kinds of things. So during this interesting period of time in the world, yeah, they really needed their teammates and it was quite helpful.
Like, do you guys have dinner together?
Most nights, yeah. Since we moved to Texas in LA, I don't feel like culture was set up for that. There was always work that was going late for somebody, or there was something happening, or there was an event, or there was, you know, something that pulled one of us away often. But when we moved to Texas, dinner happens every night together.
Wow. I'm very jealous of that. Okay. What's the TV media rule in the house?
So it's so interesting you're saying this because I was having a feeling about that this morning. We used to do movie nights on Fridays, no other TV. And when we moved to Texas and moved here without help, we started, having to pack and unpack and organize and do all these things. And I put the TV on more than I wanted to. You can actually really tell a difference in the way your child behaves when they have the TV on. They seem to be more anxious. They seem to get agitated more quickly. They seem to get like frenetic. We do have TV sometimes, but my big thing is you go from something calming to physical. So then, you know, I'll tell the kids, okay, when this show is over, we're going to turn off the TV and we're going to do some art, or we're going to go play, or we're going to go do whatever, or you guys can just play and figure out what it is that you want to play and get creative so that they know and they can start to prepare their brain. We'll be done.
Wow. But you used to be only movie night on Friday nights. That's impressive.
Well, we've gone through so many phases. Let me just be clear. When Olivia was a baby, she was up through the night screaming for 3 hours. And it's so funny because my skills that I have now, I feel like I could have figured out how to help her through that. I had no freaking clue at the time. And so James and I were exhausted. We were not sleeping. And you're also healing from birth. I would stick her in a swing in front of the TV so I could sleep.
So yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, because she's 10 years old. So you've gone through ebbs and flows of television or meals together or not meals together or like whatever. Sure.
Yeah. And then you fast forward to like Annabelle and Amelia. Well, they didn't even watch TV for the first year or two of their life. You know, they had no interest because they're like, what's that thing? That's boring. It's like, I'm not playing with that thing. But I think, listen, whatever you do, if you're starting to have this feeling where something's becoming too much, or you're noticing fits with your children, or something's going on, there's a solution. And so you got to start unraveling what you're like, what's coming through around it. So if you're feeling like the kids are watching too much TV, some really successful ways that I've like transitioned my kids out of that are having an art table, for example. So you set up a table with a ton of art supplies or Play-Doh or something fun, and you get them to start maneuvering to that. But it's also about having a conversation. Like the TV can sometimes make our brains go, ah, so we're going to try turning it off. This is not a punishment. This is an adventure to explore different parts of who we are and our creativity. And once they start to adapt to that, you find that they can really definitely have that independent meditative time doing something different. And the art can be the babysitter while you get something done.
You and James, do you feel like you guys are a real like 50-50 split? I get the sense that you are, like you guys really split up childcare duties.
James is super hands-on. He is such an incredible dad. Last week, Joshua was not feeling doing anything educational, and he wanted time with James. So he found a lake somewhere and spent some time with him and had some good bonding. And, you know, we think that that's more important sometimes if it's really, you know, to be called in. He has songs that he sings to each one of them every night, and they sing it with him. And everybody wants to make sure they have their snuggle with daddy. He does most of the cooking in the house. I love cooking. And if people have been following me long enough on Instagram, they would see all the dishes I used to make. But James really does most of the cooking. And he loves cooking on a fire, so it's phenomenal. And he'll have a kid out there usually hanging out with him while he's making something on the fire. He is the best.
Do you think there are more children in your future?
That's a great question. And I think we're definitely open. You know, there's obviously a lot of fear that I'm processing and moving through. So, yeah. I have, by the way, some helpful tips on anxiety.
Do you want to tell us? Tell us.
Anxiety is basically suppressed emotions and feelings and knowings. So one way to help is to put your hand on your solar plexus, which is where we hold our soul energy, and to just sit with it, take deep breaths through it, almost in a meditative state, allow whatever needs to surface to surface. So if it's like needing to cry or to express a feeling or a thought, or a need to journal, or even just talk and rattle off. Like you have no idea what's going to come out of your mouth, but you're just going to start spitting a flow. And eventually the gibberish will turn into an unearthing of what's been locked up in there, because it's our body like really knocking at our door, wanting to process something.
Have you always been someone so connected to your body?
No, definitely not.
Do you think birth is a huge part of something that got you connected as you are now?
It's definitely helped me. And actually, I'm definitely on a journey of really allowing my spirit to embody my body even more fully, because I have a lot of wisdom around it. And sometimes I am not following that wisdom myself. I've had a lot of beautiful people in my life that have really helped guide me in just my own intuitive knowing.
I cannot thank you enough. We're going to have you on again, because I just, there's very few women in my life who've had as many children as you and as many pregnancies and labors and experience that you have. And I just think it's so valuable because you're so connected and you're this wonderful mix of what I think is such a sweet spot. And that I take in this podcast is you're so researched and knowledgeable, but you're also so good at throwing whatever away that needs to be thrown away to really trust your gut and your instinct, and that you know what you need and you know what your kids need, mixed with like, you know your shit too. You know what I mean? So I just think it's really impressive, and you're raising beautiful humans to be put into the world.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for being on Katie's Crib.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun. It was nice to step away for a minute and have an adult conversation with somebody.
You guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. It means so much to me. What do you guys want to talk about upcoming, huh? What do you guys want? What should we talk about? Who should we have on? You know, you can always reach me via email at katiescrib@shondaland.com. Katie's Crib is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.